It's a football. It's a football.
If you don't know football, you shouldn't be with a microphone in your hand.
Hello and welcome to Soccer Sense, the sensible football podcast that is still recovering from the final days of the season across Europe and bringing you a new perspective on football. So the sensibility is intact, but we are taking our lens a little further back to try and bring you the bigger picture. After a long time, I'm joined by the full panel. So we have Vishal.
Hello, guys.
Finally making it back, Vishal. Yes. Much like Manchester United's shape and form under Erik ten Hag. Yep. And we have our European correspondent and Serie A specialist, mostly because he's able to astonishingly survive season after season watching the Serie A. It's Karan.
Yeah, hello, guys. They teach me how to basically be tough in life. To have a thick skin, basically.
So we're going to look at, we are recording this pod after all the regular seasons in Europe are over. We're just waiting for the Champions League final, of course. It's been quite a whirlwind season in the top five leagues, especially in the men's leagues, for sure, which is our main beat. So we'll begin there. And we finally have a full panel so we can go through all of the leagues. This is going to be one of those quick trips across Europe. No 20% tax collected at source. So we begin with Karan. Karan, Premier League, we knew what was coming. I think we talked about City being able to pip Arsenal quite a while ago when Arsenal were around the 50-point mark. It eventually did happen. Does not blemish Arsenal as much because they clearly were punching above their weight, and it's very hard to keep punching above your weight into the 12th round of a heavyweight fight. City clearly know how to manage that better. So we're not going to spend a lot of time on the top of the table, although it by itself was interesting. What happened was a lot of action at the bottom of the table, all the three newly promoted clubs staying up. But going down where Southampton and going down where Leeds, unfortunate story again there, and going down where Leicester, a story that you want to talk about, Karan, because it encapsulates within a decade, quite the roller coaster ride. I mean, the global economy has not gone through these vicissitudes as Leicester have.
Yeah, I think Leicester will be one of the greatest sports stories ever. I remember when we, back in 2016, we were kind of saying that, you know, it's, initially we were saying it's the greatest Cinderella story since Cinderella, but then in reality we rechristened it as Cinderella's the greatest Leicester story. So I think that's what they've achieved in the last 10 years. If you look back through from where it started and where it's, and the highs, the lows, everything, the heartbreak of missing out in the Premier League against Watford in the last minute, that in itself was an extraordinary game. Very next season, being able to kind of motivate themselves to do it all over again and get promotion. And the first season, the Premier League, I think, what was it? They were bottom at Christmas. They were basically out, down and out, and still managing to put a run together and surviving. Winning the league after that, quarterfinals of the Champions League. And then I think after that, it was a case of maybe a lot of people had false expectations. But in reality, you know, it was a case of a team punching above their weight. Having said that, they still did manage to kind of keep up some of their performances, regardless of losing a lot of those players that won them the league title. They had a couple of eighth place finishes, couple of ninth place finishes, which actually, let's be honest, for a team like Leicester is a great achievement. Added to that, under Brendan Rodgers, two consecutive seasons where they missed out on the Champions League in the last day. So I think it's been an extraordinary ride, and now back to relegation, back to where it all started. In many ways, it's kind of like one of those Greek tragedies where, you know, the highs are like absolutely extraordinary and the lows are absolutely, almost painful to kind of bear.
Romantic current is about this, but let's not forget to attribute this to absolute piss poor management, absolute piss poor decision-making of holding on to Brendan Rodgers, piss poor decision-making when it comes to transfers. let's also be honest, with that wage bill, with that squad, you still should not be anywhere close to the relegation zone. So as romantic as the story is, that's also a great, great lesson in absolutely.
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of like the story of Icarus, right? Flew too close to the sky and burst.
Well,
his
less than Icarus, it's more like, I mean, what if you want to go through the story of Icarus, more about terrible wing design than flying too close. because that's what Vishal is bringing out, right? That it's decision making and management, which is also obviously a critical part of it. And when Vishal was saying that let's not romanticize this story because they should not anywhere be near relegation with that kind of a squad and management has been piss poor and so on, I was about to say that enough talk about Everton, Vishal, let's move on to Leicester. But
those comebacks are still in the league. I cannot believe this.
But I mean, talking about the management of Leicester, I mean, yes, I would say the management has definitely been poor recently, but that should not overshadow how the management was in the first half of this run. It's in many ways like how we kind of describe Arsene Wenger's tenure, right? First half, great. Second half, shit.
So, and that's how the Premier League has played out. We now will see some amazing clubs come back in and take those places. One of them will be Luton Town.
Yeah, I think they have to ring the doorbell, like we said.
Which is a ground I'm very interested to do a recce on if I do land up in the UK, because it's barely a 30-minute train ride away from London. And it'll be worthwhile to check Kenilworth Road just for the vibes it has as a classic tiny English stadium. But speaking of the likes of Luton Town and those have made it back up on the Premier League, including Sheffield, again, they have in front of them examples of how to survive, because three clubs have just shown that route, and including Brentford and Brighton, who have shown how to actually outdo your first seasons out there. So quick word on that, gentlemen, in terms of the management, in terms of doing things right. Vishal, you had a point about that and scouting.
Absolutely, right? Because both those clubs are not built on massive wage bills, inflated salaries and players who are supposed superstars, right? Now, Brighton, for example, have churned out great manager after manager, great player after player, and every year lose their best players but find apt replacements, right? And that's not fluke, because Brighton's scouting system has been amazing from the time they've actually moved up from the lower leagues all the way to the Premier League, and it continues, right? And if you already see they've moved on from McAllister, they've also moved on from one more player, I do not recollect his name, but they've already signed three players for next season. And that's on the last day, or announced on the last day of the current season, right? That means they already have clear idea on what's missing, what needs to be filled, and therefore what are the kind of players that brings in. And that takes foresight, and that's what really clubs are missing, right? Because because what's happened in English football specifically is it's also a massive, massive commercial property almost for owners, right? So therefore, lots of people coming in, lots of people pumping in money, but not necessarily making the right decision. Then Brentford too. Great decision making, sticking to a good core of players, not losing the core of players by building around them, and consistency management. And the good part is their managers also very, very clear about who they are and their identity, and not trying to really be something that they're not, right? And I think clarity always pays good results.
All right. And speaking of clarity paying off good results, let's move to Curran's beat, which is the Serie A, where we had quite the season. Karan, like you were saying, that it's quite the season when you know that Napoli are the model of sanity in the league.
Yeah, all you need to do is just Google the crazy things that De Laurentiis says, and your afternoon is done. Your afternoon is open for some really good entertainment. But, you know, all that aside, I think, like we've been discussing, I think at least for the last 2 to 3 months, Napoli winning the league is probably one of the best things that we could have seen in recent times. I mean, with all the romance of Maradona and all that, I think it was great. I mean, they definitely do deserve credit for that. Everywhere else in the league was an absolute mess and an absolute shambles. So just another season in Serie A then.
Okay, so and speaking of just another season in Serie A, Karan, Juve had quite the roller coaster season again. You had the point deduction, you had the point deduction taken away, the point deduction reinstated. There seems to be quite a lot going on in Juve and another large European club, but we'll come back to that a little later. But the situation at Juve, Karan, again. Where do they go from there? Because they've had, well, at least two bad seasons in a row now.
Well, keeping the point deduction aside, right? That definitely cannot be used as an excuse because the team was poor even before the points deduction. I mean, people can say all they want about, you know, the squad. Do they have the right players? Do they have the wrong players? At the end of the day, this is the players that they did have. Should still be beating teams like Monza and Maccabi Haifa, right? So there is absolutely no excuses when it comes to that. And in addition to that, I think it's reached a point where Allegri especially is starting to sound like the grumpy old man next door, who's basically so delusional in his own world that he refuses to see anything that resembles a semblance of sanity outside of his realm. It's pretty much like that. I think he's basically now, you know, with some of the comments that he's made recently, it's almost reaching a point where it's like subconsciously he's literally begging for them to fire him. And he's basically been losing supporters season after season, both within and outside the club. So that's going to be something to kind of look out for in the coming months as well, in addition to what's going to happen with the FIGC.
Right, and let's move on from there, the absolute madness that has been going on in Serie A, to the absolute madness that went down on the final day in the Bundesliga. The Bundesliga is a league we don't talk about past Christmas on this podcast.
And that's a good season.
that is one of the good seasons. But this year, we have to, because it went down to the last day. Dortmund had a terrific chance to seal a title win after a decade odd break the band hegemony after 10 straight title wins. They had everything in their hands. They were playing, as I was saying, the Jurgen Klopp Memorial Derby. They were playing Mainz at home, so all they had to do was beat Mainz, and that should have been that. Meanwhile, Bayern Munich were taking on FC Cologne. Did not happen. They went down two goals within 15 minutes to Mainz of all people. Eventually ended up blowing their chance. Karan, you had a historical parallel to draw to that. At the turn of the century, when something similar happened in the Bundesliga.
Yeah, something probably even more extraordinary than what happened this time around. But Dortmund's noisy neighbors, Schalke, actually pulled off something similar back in the 90s where they, going into the final round of matches, I think they had to win or draw their game.
No, they had to win their game and hope for a result or rather hope for Bayern to drop points.
Bayern to lose, basically. So they won their game and the game that Bayern were playing was still not over. And Bayern were actually trailing in that, and they actually ended up scoring two stoppage time goals to win the game. So technically, Schalke were champions for 4 minutes,
and they've never been champions. Going so back in history, this happened in Manchester very recently.
It's not there are English parallels of that, and of course,
this is literally something that the other night when Dortmund actually equalized in the 96th minute, I messaged saying, do they still have time? And you actually said, Aguero could blow.
but obviously, did not quite work out that way for Dortmund, because they'd already made it far too difficult for themselves. And Bayern themselves came up with a last-minute winner with Jamal Musiala scoring. But again, this is the German league where the Bayern hegemony has become a bit of a joke. And despite everything that German football does right, again, Vishal bringing in the larger point about scouting, about teams, about management, would you have an opinion on why the Bundesliga is not able to produce somebody who's at least a threat to Bayern, who seem to be cruising every single time? I mean, despite the fact that there is now chaos at Bayern as well.
Yeah, it's simple, right? Because it's pure money, almost like it's sadly purely money, right? Dortmund cannot afford to hold on to a player after a point in time because they somehow make 100 million every year through one of their marquee players, right? And more often than not, 90% of the time, it seems to be Bayern Munich who seems to be buying these players off the top. Any good player produced anywhere in Germany by them, right? So therefore, that also, like if you look at the Bayern team now, it's this mixture of German come, foreign players, and all and the young German players are not really coming to the fore. And all these years back, we used to keep talking about how the German league is designed to constantly produce players for the German national team. And over the last 6 years, 7 years, you've seen how that's falling apart as well. And this is purely a function of how the club structure is failing, right? Because Dortmund and Bayern Munich, who were the clear producers of these talent, Dortmund are now buying young talent from outside. One of the best examples right now is Haaland and Bellingham, right? Again, all players not from Germany, but going to be sold for lots of money. And it's just become a vicious circle in Germany, right? So Bayern, and the worst part is it's showing in for Bayern Munich in Europe, because as easy as it is in the league, they never get to really compete in the league. And that shows that when it comes to facing a tough team in Europe, and that's when they constantly fall short.
And which brings us out of the Bundesliga into the last point that we wanted to cover, because we want to cover sort of the top leagues in Europe, is... we go to Spain, where Barcelona sealed the title, outpacing Real Madrid. First title for them since Lionel Messi, which is symbolic in a sense, because we want to talk about the fact that we are entering this new era where the one big superstar or the one big face seems to be disappearing. And that seems to be happening across sport. But particularly, again, looking at the Spanish situation and the example, how do we see the next season panning out? Because City might be facing a reckoning about their financial fair play. All these other leagues seem to be in a little bit of turmoil. Bayern have fired some of their top executives. They would need a bit of a reset. A lot of clubs in the English Premier League are looking at the opportunity. It could be United. It could be Arsenal. Liverpool have to look at how they can deliver as a unit rather than relying on superstars. They've had a couple of big exits as well. Yeah. So, Vishal, from a larger perspective, not a specific league perspective, how does a fan gear up for the post-superstar era?
Like you said, right? First, going back to how you said it's symbolic that Barcelona have just won their first title without the superstar. However, the biggest conversation still remains that this superstar could be coming back here, right? And the superstar is now 35 years old, has possibly been the biggest name along with Cristiano Ronaldo for close to two decades now. And for the first ever time, we don't have a clear face for football, right? There are two, there is almost like really one team that's dependent on a star, that's Mbappe and PSG, and you know how that's going. So I think we are now possibly for the next few years at least entering into this phase of where the clubs like Arsenal, clubs like Liverpool, and what Ten Hag is attempting at United, right, which is to build a squad, which is to build a squad with depth, which is to build a squad with good players, not necessarily world-class players or one world-class player, right? Like if you look at Arsenal and this team that they built, all potentially great players, but still not going to be world beaters individually, right? Similarly, Liverpool have made a complete example of how they've done this over the last 6-7 years, and it seems like they're going back in that direction where towards the second half of the season they focus more and more on coming back to the team style of football, You go back to Italy, the two most stable clubs, and I'm putting Napoli aside because I still consider this an aberration. It's been Milan and Inter Milan and AC Milan, right? Who over the past couple of years, past 2-3 years, have been putting out decent teams. And Atlanta, of course, have always been in that reckoning as well. So anybody who's now playing the long-term game, playing who's now building a scouting network, consistently identifying young talent and bringing them to the team seems to be the formula again. It's refreshing to see because it might actually bring back great management into football. And I must segue and give a shout out to Jose Mourinho because what he's doing with Roma is absolutely fantastic. So again, a function of smart management, smart signings, adding depth via players that are available in the market, but not necessarily superstars. So there seems to be another solution out there. It just seemed to be forgotten over the last few years with clubs like Manchester City, with clubs like PSG, with clubs like Bayern Munich, and all of them seem to be in on course for some sort of downfall or some sort of punishment or something of that sort. So if that continues, I think the next few years of football might just be the most stable and sensible, truly sensible style of football that we see.
Except at Juventus.
Yeah, I think they should just shut operations.
So I think we need to, Karan, we need to sort of factory reset Juventus and Serie A, I guess, just to see where we can get them back on, yeah?
Yeah, why not? But like you always say, right, about Star Wars, and I keep saying this, this universe is at its most, this universe is at its best when it's more chaotic.
When there is more chaos.
Just stop it.
So it always comes out, no chaos, there's no real entertainment value. I mean, why do you think The Bold and the Beautiful ran for so many years?
Did you just compare your Juventus to Bold and Beautiful?
No, I compared Serie A to Bold and Beautiful.
Oh my God. See, Vishal, having the full panel pod was a bad idea. We should have done from the start.
Yeah, I knew it. I knew it all along.
But gentlemen, again, this also represents, I mean, we have been around for 10 years plus now, which is also quite saying something because we have seen this entire era through the eyes of this pod and the discussions. And obviously, the podcast looks into the future in terms of what comes up next season. And that's why we are changing our vantage point a little bit as well. And our objective would be to bring in this long-term perspective to the things that are happening in the world of football. And that's why we are Soccer Sense in terms of bringing you the sense of the surroundings by panning back a little bit, because there are dime a dozen discussions about what's happening in the here and now. But as we always say, the football is played over an entire season, and there is a lot that can happen within a season. All right, gentlemen, quick word on what is the one big thing we might see emerge in 2023-24?
The one thing that emerges for me is better scouting, lesser money spent on world-class players, but more money invested on developing your players and building depth in the squad. And I genuinely think we are at some point financial fair play will do its job. So I see more sensible planning and management in football across, except Chelsea.
All right, and
yeah, I kind of agree to that. It's kind of like in many ways, probably you could say, for almost like a decade, it was a case of, you know, the financial might of certain teams basically kind of dominating the market. So, but now I think even from the transfer market perspective, things are going to kind of come down to a certain extent. We're not going to see those mad transfers, and probably the prices as well are going to be a lot more realistic as opposed to just inflated prices.
Yeah, because it's also fun that they're running out of players to invest that kind of crazy money on, right? There's your Haaland, yeah. There's your Mbappe, and there are 2-3 other players that you would really spend that kind of money on. But they're like I think the greatest example is Real Madrid in the last 2-3 years. While it's incidental that they've not spent the money, but I think they themselves have seemed to come to the fruition that, listen, there is another way to be successful. So
yeah. And even when it comes to wages, right? And I think we were just discussing Barcelona, for example, have cut their wage bill by almost 200 million over the course of the last couple of seasons, which in many ways, yes, to some extent, it was forced on them. But I think this is going to be a case for a lot of clubs going forward.
All right. So hopefully we see those and we bring those to you on the pod. My own two cents on that would be that we'd also see the emergence of probably the women's game being mainstreamed even more, because this year the final day of the women's the Super League was being actually covered here in India with Fancode streaming them, because the final day was an interesting one as well. Both Chelsea and Man United theoretically had the possibility of winning the title. Eventually, Chelsea running away winners because they were facing relegation threat and Reading never really in doubt. Third title in 3 years. And those would be another interesting factor that emerges, not least because this is a Women's World Cup year as well. And we hope to bring you some more perspective from that world as well to cover the football world a little more widely than we have done before. We owe at least that much, guys, for the last 10 years that we have been in the space.
That is true. That is true.
Indeed.
And I think it's I don't think it's a forced coverage at all. It's almost a natural progression. And like you said, culminating at the football, the Women's World Cup. So it will be interesting to talk about it, go a little more in depth and see where it's heading, because all clubs are, again, moving in the right direction in the space. Lots of investments in the right space, investments in broadcast rights. So I think for once, WNBA should take lots of notes from how the Premier League are really promoting women's football in specific. I think it's been quite great, to be completely honest. So yeah, I think that might be something that we definitely go deeper into next year.
Yeah. Right. And probably even the other thing is the investment in grassroots level, because now from what it was maybe 15, 20 years back, you have a lot more young kids who are, young girls who are actually, getting into the game and getting the opportunity to even play at such a young age. So I think that's a big, big, big deal.
So we will, of course, be bringing you stories from all of those sides on the pod. This is SoccerSense 2.0 for you from here on in. So look for us on any of the feeds of your favorite podcast services. We're there on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Podcasts, and all other podcast platforms that you can think of. That's all the time we have for sort of our relaunch at the end of a chaotic season, but looking forward to, like Karan said, an even more chaotic season and trying to make sense of that as we go along. So you can follow us on Twitter at Sense Soccer, and we will also put our Twitter IDs on the show notes. Meanwhile, this is Tariq signing off along with Karan.
See you guys.
And Vishal.
For God's sake, sell Harry Maguire.
We are still playing for United, Vishal. It has come a full circle now.
Yes.
He's still at United?